Hello everyone, welcome to the seminar at the Institute of Rural and Agricultural Development of the Polish Academy of Sciences. My name is Paweł Chmieliński. I'm a food system researcher, but also the director for science of the Institute. And I have a great pleasure to have a unique guest in our premises, five researchers that are involved in a collaboration with us on a perspectives of the food systems in Europe. So today a seminar is entitled Food Systems in Europe, Experiences, Barriers and Perspectives of Transformation. And this seminar is supported by the one of the EU funded projects that is called FOSNET, a Horizon Europe project creating a pan-European network for sustainable food system research. So this project map research needs, facilitate multi-stakeholder dialogue, support national food system, and contribute to strategic research and agenda development. The goal of the project is to better coordinate, create the more impactful research and address Europe's diverse food system challenges. So today's presentation and discussion will be around this, about different perspectives in Europe on the food system transformation. And to talking about the food system, like from the perspective of the FOSNET project, it defines the food system as a interdisciplinary systemic approach that links entire food chain, so like the production, processing, distribution, and consumption, but also like waste. And it emphasizes the systemic approach, so different elements of the social, economic, and environmental drivers, and also thinking about how to transform them into the more sustainable, healthy, and resilient system. So this is the perspective we'll be discussing today. And our guests that I will introduce in a moment, they are the part of the Knowledge Hub of the of this project. So like Knowledge Hub is connecting researchers, policymakers, and the practitioners across Europe around the certain topics of the food system transformation. So we'll be working together, investigating the intermediaries development in the different countries, those perspectives, to bring this perspective of this approach to Central Eastern Europe, to look at what is different, what is similar across the countries in the different geographies. So today we'll have two presentations, and then followed by the panel discussion with our guests. Silvia Scaramuzzi will give a talk entitled Mapping Food Systems Research and Innovation Needs and Gaps in Europe. So she will discuss the state of research and the gaps in the European approach. And then Professor Emil Erjavec will deliver a speech, Is the Food System Transition Ignored in Central Eastern Europe? Very interesting. Insights from Slovenia, but I can promise that this is not only like reflecting the Slovenian case, but more in general of a Central Eastern European perspective. And then those two presentations will be followed by the discussion with speakers and guests. And our guests are Dr. Lidia Maurowicz-Kosak, is head of the Department for Development at the Croatian Agency for Agriculture and Food. Key areas of her scientific and professional work include sustainable food system, short food supply chains, and support models for the small agri-food producers. Hello, Lidia. Mm-hmm. That's Lidia. And then Dr. Marijke Pampus is a human geographer at Martin Luther University Halle Wittenberg, and her research focuses on the social ecological transformation from qualitative social science perspectives. Hello. And then Mr. Peter Noy is the director of the Food Systems Institute at the University of Nottingham. The Institute supports interdisciplinary food systems research programs focused on informing food policy, supporting equitable food system transition, and food system perspective. Peter is encompassing all those issues within the team of a university. And Emil Erjavec is a professor of the agriculture policy and economics at the University of Ljubljana, Slovenia. His research focuses on the political economy, strategic planning, and EU integration of agriculture policy. Hello, Emil. And finally, Professor Silvia Scaramuzzi is Associate Professor of Agri-Food Economics and Territorial Marketing at the University of Florence. Her research focuses on rural development, food quality, supply chains, and agriculture policies using participatory approaches. And she has led numerous international EU and regional projects. And she co-leads one of the tasks in the Future Foods big European partnership for the food system development. But also she is an active member of the SCAR, Food System Strategic Working Group, Standing Committee on the Agriculture Research. So what we have today is like first 40 minutes we'll have for the presentations, and then there will be the discussion between the our guests, and then we'll invite audience to ask the questions. Our today's seminar is also online, so we have a transmission on the Zoom and the YouTube, where we encourage everyone to ask the questions. We try to select and like read them, select and ask them to the to our honorable guests. So let's start. We start with the presentation of the of this Silvia Scaramuzzi. Okay, some regrouping, and dear Silvia, the floor is yours. You have approximately 20 minutes for your presentation, then Emil, and then we'll continue. So thank you very much. The microphone is yours.
So good morning, everybody, and thanks for being here. I'm very excited at sharing my work, but first of all, I would like to thank Pavel and all the IRIPAN group for inviting me to Warsaw. It's my first time in Warsaw. But I always like to say that half of my blood is in the Eastern countries because my mom is Czech. So I am really deeply involved in this challenge we have with the FastNet project. I was asked by Pavel to share the work I'm coordinating on mapping food systems research and innovation at European level. This is a work that I have been conducting during the last 5-6 years. So I will try to share a synthesis, but I'm open to questions in case you have. Just to give a general framework and context, we all know that our global agri-food systems are in crisis. This crisis is multifaceted because, as you may understand, and as we are all living, we have an environmental dimension of the crisis that is related to agriculture as one of the major contributors to the transgression of planetary boundaries. But also, and sometimes we don't think enough about it, we have a social dimension where we have a global obesity epidemic problem. We have a rising incidence of chronic non-communicable diseases that are linked to current diets. And also we have an economic dimension that is very important, the rising of production costs that is even more important now after the recent war we have in the Gulf. The social and financial impacts that now exceed the total value produced by the sector. Unfortunately, we are not taking into account these externalities many times, but we should do so. And then we have a growing scientific focus on agri-food system transition and transformation. We all share here, surely, a common theme, that is the need for a a systemic approach in order to understand the interdependencies across all these dimensions that I have mentioned. Nonetheless, most of this is a rhetoric. This is a rhetoric about everybody talking about agri-food transition or transformation, especially in research. But science and institutions, they often are very fragmented. They don't communicate to each other. They often have funding, but the funding is not really in line with the systemic approach. It still has often a very silos approach, a very sectorial approach. And what I want to put forward is that what we need is really to try to understand better what are the lock-in mechanisms in sustaining the dominant model that is not systemic and that is mainly productivist. We have to challenge political and governance structures that reproduce it, and this is a very hard task. And we really think that scientists, and here most of us are scientists as far as I believe, we have to play an important role. We have to be honest brokers in order to co-create good frameworks towards transition and hopefully transformation of food systems. So the guiding questions are, what is the role of scientific research in supporting this transition? And in what ways are these challenges being addressed at EU level? I shared with you this horrible photo about Food 2040. The Commission is stating that they are going towards a food system strategic research and innovation agenda for competitive, sustainable and resistant food systems. So we are already going towards 2040, but are we really going towards 2040 in the right way? So the background is the scar that Pavel was mentioning. A few years ago, I was part of a tender that was supporting the scar towards a better role, towards its advisory function to the Commission. And I was also coordinating the SCAR support team for the Food System Strategic Working Group. And this strategic working group was designing the new partnership for food systems and designing the first strategic research and innovation agenda towards food system transformation. The result of our work at the time was an investigation on research and innovation needs and gaps, a report that was published by the European Commission and that I had the honor of leading, and that was the basis of the new Future Foods Partnership. That is a European partnership for a sustainable future of food systems that will last until 2034. So it's really a very long time perspective, and we are really eager to try to play a role towards this objective. It's also related to many other partnerships that you see listed on the right-hand side of my slide. And what I've been doing is to co-lead the design of the Strategic Research and Innovation Agenda of the Future Foods Partnership, on which the next calls of the partnership will be based and are already based. So the mission and vision what are of the partnerships are really going towards environmentally friendly, socially secure, fair, economically viable, healthy and safe food systems in Europe. This is the vision. Of course, we hope to reach that. And the mission is really related to research and innovation. That is, mobilize research and innovation to accelerate the transition towards sustainable food systems with a wide range of actors who are joining forces. So what is in our scope? We have four main pillars on which we want to build this transition. They are very easy to understand. We want to change the way we eat, change the way we process and supply food, change the way we connect with food systems, and change the way we govern food systems. And along these key objectives, some main pathways have been identified. The priority need one is transforming production, processing, distribution, and consumption towards circular food systems. That is a supply chain approach. But we really think that we need an overarching food system approach in order to have the possibility to reach the third priority need, that is facing the food situation that is safe, sustainable, healthy, fair, and trusted for and by everyone. So this is the social perspective that is really very relevant to the partnership. And I was telling you, I'm co-coordinating this SRIA update, but as you see below, there is a whole range of researchers and experts that have joined this group. And Pavel will, you anticipated me, will, and the whole institute will join from next June this group, because they were invited and they accepted to collaborate. So we are very honored that in the next 8 years, this institute will continue to collaborate to this agenda design. The background is the conceptual framework. As I was sharing with my colleagues, we have many different conceptual frameworks on food systems. What we understood is that the conceptual framework has to be adapted to the goal the researchers have. And in the specific goal the partnership has, we really need to understand not only who are the actors, what are their activities, and what are their interactions that you see at the center, but we want to understand what are the interdependencies, what are the feedback loops that we can identify. But what is even more important, and we were discussing it in our meeting before, what are the driving forces and what are the policy actions that can be undertaken in order to reach our goals. So the methodology is quite complicated. We have adopted a participatory methodology. We have co-designed this strategic research and innovation agenda. It's been a long process that has lasted more than 1 year. We have first identified through a scoping approach what are the research and innovation knowledge and main questions and their definition. We have identified recent research and innovation topics towards food system transformation related to the four research and innovation areas that I have listed before through a portfolio analysis that is analyzing all the projects that have been funded in the last years at EU level through the Food 2030 database, and also carried out a literature review in order to understand what are the gaps, because we don't want the EU to continue to fund always the same themes. We really want to address the gaps and what are the research priorities within the gaps, And finally, to ensure the consistency along the whole strategic research and innovation agenda that is 120 pages long. We have just finished our open consultation with relevant stakeholders. That is, we sent this RIA all over Europe specifically to representatives within the SCAR Food System Working Group and the other members of the Standing Committee on Agricultural Research. And we got feedbacks and positive feedbacks and also other contributions from the whole Europe. So here are the main areas and the main pillars. I will go more in depth into that. To let you understand what are the strategic priorities that were identified in terms of research and innovation. So in the change the way we eat, the better guiding consumer behavior towards sustainable and healthy diets has been identified as a priority. And this has to be declined in terms of influencing capability, that is education, capability to choose, opportunity in terms of availability of food and affordability for the society to choose those special foods, and motivations in terms of food choices. Second pillar is address domestic food practices for enhancing sustainable and healthy diets. And for those who have seen the last call of Future Foods, this was one of the topics that was chosen in the last call. And also transitioning to sustainable diets while ensuring food security and nutritional needs for all, which means assessing the impact of sustainable and healthy diets, and also, and this is very important to us, addressing inequalities. We really want to be inclusive. The second area is change the way we process and supply. Here we have two main pillars. In the change the way we process, we address a lot food product diversifications, processes for preserving naturalness and or enhanced sustainability, circularity, packaging, and energy and water reduction. In pillar two, change the way we supply, we mostly address an integrated assessment across the supply chain, sustainable procurement, food waste, and chain efficiency, digital innovation, and food safety. In change the way we connect, and here there is another important theme that has been addressed already by the past call. This is just to let you know that the work we are undertaking is not just research, is really identifying the themes that then the funders decide to address to the scientific community to be faced through relevant funding. Importance of trust and transparency is a leading team in order to have a common regulatory framework and labeling system, evaluation of metrics and indicators, and the very important role of living labs in terms of addressing these themes in a participatory way, place-based approach that to our perspective is particularly relevant. Second pillar is getting everyone on board. And third pillar is the role of food democracy. I must say that in the open consultation that we have just closed, for example, the role of food democracy was not well understood and was not prioritized by the different stakeholders. But still, we will see how we will deal with it in the next years. The final pillar is change the way we govern. That really addresses the state of food system governance. We think that governance is a transversal pillar that should be addressed by all projects. We don't want to operate in silos. That is, these different areas of research are, of course, interconnected. They may be prevalent in one call or in another, but they are still often present if we really want to have a systemic approach. In the open consultation, the first pillar was considered less important than the second, that is, sustainable food system governance and power dynamics are thought as particularly relevant, both in the private and public domain. Here I want to stress the fact that too often people think that governance is only a public issue. It is a private issue too. We need to coordinate among the actors. We need to understand how to better distribute power and value. We need to understand within scales and across scales how to scale up the very good place-based successful projects that unfortunately have not reached a sufficient upscaling. And this needs inclusivity, balance of power, needs orchestration, which is something we really want the next research and innovation in food systems to be addressing. So the approach we are adopting for the moment, but still working on that, towards transformation, is a socio-technical regime approach. That is, at the moment, we have a main technical regime that is being challenged. Often we have a very small scale innovations that are happening in living labs or in hub of knowledge hubs like ours. But really we want this innovation that is not only technological. I always want to stress the fact that innovation is also in organization terms and in social innovation. That has to become mainstream, that has to be upscaled. And this is not easy to carry out. So we have an observatory that is going to monitor that, and Pavel and the Institute will participate in the observatory too. And we have a whole work package on science to policy innovation. That is, we really want the systemic approach to be implemented in a cohesive and coherent way. As you see, we are at the sixth step. Now we have worked for 1.5 years on that. We have already shared the draft online of the SRIA. And what I want to say is that this SRIA will also contribute to the EU Strategic Research and Innovation Agenda on Food 2040. We have already discussed it with DG Agri and DG Research, and we will still share it with the Commission in order to try to make them understand that the partnership is not enough. It doesn't have enough funding and enough researchers in order to reach all these objectives. So just to get to the conclusions, I think I'm in time. This is the evidence, in order to reach transformation, this participatory co-design process has told us a few things. First of all, the analysis reveals still a structural contradiction between the rhetoric and the fact that everybody thinks in our EU research and innovation community that they are adopting a food system approach, but yet most of the time the research is very disciplinary, it's very fragmented, and there is not enough coordination between science and policy. So the cross-cutting priorities we have identified, even within a SCAR Standing Committee on Agriculture Research Policy paper that we have carried out also with Pavel and with many other experts is that we need to align research and innovation with the structural transformation. Transition is not enough. We don't have to just have an incremental optimization of the processes that are already standing in our mainstream model. We need to institutionalize shared knowledge infrastructures, that is a food system observatory and living labs as platforms for monitoring, learning and dealing with an adaptive governance. And this is what we suggested to the Commission in our policy paper. And we need to embed resilience as a design principle. We don't have to understand resilience just as a way to be able to respond to crisis. Resilience has to be based on diversification, on cross-scale risk modeling, and it must be central to the strategic research and innovation agenda. So we have a strategic opportunity, first of all with Future Foods, but also with other projects. FOSNET is one of that, Knowledge Hub is another, SCAR is another, to gap between evidence and governance. We really want to act as science policy society interfaces, connecting research with policy cycles across scales, and I think this is one of the places, and tomorrow we will have another one as a demonstration that this is really our goal. And just as a last sentence, food system transition and transformation even more is not just a technological challenge. Even at EU level, we too many times hear talking about technology only. It is a governance, knowledge, and power challenge that we all have. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know if you have a very specific questions to this part, because like we would like to move on and have another presentation and then open the floor for some questions and for the discussion. And Sylvia mentioned that as in the very last sentence, the disciplinary fragmented logic and institutional design, it is like applied in Europe, although do we have a great process of a discussion in that those interface policy science. I have a impression that like the research is taking a lot of effort to first understand and then translate the knowledge about the food system and the food system transformation transition into the policy language, but still there is like some lack of this setup that would allow us as researchers to make this dialogue like fruitful for the tools, yeah, for the solutions. And that's why this is the great introduction to the second presentation of Emil, that will bring us perspective of Slovenia and some very, very practical approach, maybe like the challenges he faced working with the food system approach. So Emil, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you a lot, so dear Pavel, and I'm very happy to be here. I'm a political economist, dealing in the past with sector modeling, now in the last years mostly with political science analysis. So systemic approach is something which I have in the mind. But with seniority is also coming that you are starting to analyze new topics and new challenges, and this is the reason why we put our finger also to the food system transition. What I will tell you is more than research, the provocation. I am a more storyteller in this sense, but I think with the opening the questions, it will be, I think, also very interesting for you, and you can compare these things with developments in Poland. So what is my intention? to see how the concept of food system transition is adopted in legislation, political discourses in Slovenia, and to get some experiences, some recommendations for other CEC countries, with some theses. So main questions are, is food system transition legally established? How it is embedded in the country political discourse? What is the general understanding of concept? Who are the actors, the main actors who understand and advocate it? And who does not accept? And what are the key reasons for relatively low level of acceptance? And how this concept can be transferred more quickly and deeply. We made this analysis through the, I will say, something like, I will say, real world story, so Living Lab. We were asked through one another project to help, to assist, in fact, to coordinate the preparation of the state document, Vision for the Agriculture and Food 2014 in Slovenia, where behind it was food system transition and transformation as the basic document for the actual new policy arena and after the change in MFF after 2028. It was a 16-month process, very long, with a lot of workshops, emerging materials, finished 2 months ago. More than 40 organizations, first time also such a dialogue between farm organization and vegan organization, animal welfareists and so on, but because mostly they never talk to each other. More than 250 people were involved. And we finalized the document. It is in the process of the governmental decision, but we have no elections after the election period. I think this was a good case. It was not the primary objective to analyze how far we are with food system transformation, but it was good case to analyze where we are and where we are going. So in this part two of presentation, I will try to assess and to present the lessons from this case case study. So first to the vision. Yes, this was official procedure and we were quite innovative. We developed on our own methodology based on general principle of vision building preparation, how to be participatory, how to use scenarios, how to use existing data. In fact, we were for the start very ambitious to use also the models, but then we started only with indicators and foresight of and predictions of indicators. Also, it was the project was Tools for CAP, maybe you heard it about it. So, but also behind it was how to improve administrative capacity and stimulate multi-actors dialogue and system thinking. So lead organization was Ministry of Agriculture with us, with support of Agriculture Institute, so formally quite seriously organized. So at the start of the concept, we say, okay, we have to shift from only or mostly from only mostly agriculture-focused issues to the more systematic approach to the food system. We use this Nourish system. It's one of the definition, but it's quite presentable. Everything is in the one case. I will not go into the definition, but it was presented all the time in the whole process. What was interesting, it was agreement between the key persons in the ministry dealing with the issue and us to provocate, to stimulate food system transition. So we started, in fact, very easily with visualizing issues, preparing system, and it was interesting. This was without, it was a preparation study without other stakeholders, so environmentalists, public health, and so on, mostly people from agricultural backgrounds, from the ministry and from the research institution and extension. And it was interesting that it was clearly visualized in terms of agriculture and the impacts. Okay, what was in fact very innovative first time, the impacts also on the public health, on of course on biodiversity, climate, so recognized. And then we discovered that we have to broaden our perspective. And first, before we go into the change, we made also prioritizing issues, and again, we were a little bit shocked that mostly agriculture issues were the most important. Why? Because this agriculture policy, it is behind. So this learned us that we have to move, and in fact, in the basic workshops with the bigger community with all NGOs and other ministries, then we somehow collect much broader opinions, and we try to summarize them. Only to show how the vision was based on indicators, we developed 150 indicators with time series and trends by 2040, which was baseline scenario, so where we are going without any changes in policy and in observation. And then we develop alternative scenario with discussion about the mechanism and so on to see where the things could go. And here is, of course, it's in Slovenian language, but you see, so it's number of farms and some of standard outputs where we are going. There is a structural change. We have to change. We have to change perspective. We would like to have still sustainable development. Strong public presentations, very well prepared workshops. And it was funny. So, especially for the agriculture, farmers' organization, chambers, syndicate, cooperative movements, young youth association, they were completely under the shock that they are sitting together with 30, 40 small groups of people, and they ask, we should negotiate separately, not with them, and so on. But the others, it was the first dialogue or the first impression to stick with the agriculture issues and agricultural interests. They had also a problem how to communicate and how to do it. But somehow we come to the final document. And the document is quite comprehensive, 65 pages. With a clear statement, we need a food system approach, we need a transition, we have to look on everything. This is not common agriculture policy vision, it is a vision for the country. All public policies should be included, and we need a more systematic approach. So we developed 6 development priorities. For the first time, we talk about the food environment, our nutrition environment, with stronger emphasis on the agri-food chain, with all impacts, so relatively modern, well structured. Under the 6 development priorities, we had 25 strategic objectives, which are really descriptive. So we are going with the farm structure in this direction. We would like to have such a supply chain. We will reduce the impacts on this and this. We will take care on nutrition and so on. And of course, we mentioned also we developed some basic sentences, basic arguments for mechanism. Everything okay? So how we can assess the document, how many food system tradition is evolving? Okay, if we are clear, so title as such is not very ambitious, Vision for Agriculture and Food, but it was political reason behind, because if we will say food system transformation, the agriculture interest group will be against from the start. What is interesting that with so many versions of the text and a huge work of the editors, we slowly bring more balanced approach with also, I think, the most of the elements, what we are able and willing to adopt. And this came through the dialogue. The first time the dialogue between different groups. So final assessments of the participants at the last workshop was that agriculture stakeholders were not very happy. They said it's a green vision, we need a food security vision, we will be hungry, it's end of the world, and so on, the typical political statement, but somehow we convinced them that this is the first trial and that they have to struggle for support, and they have to hear what the society is telling them. But they were not completely against, so they adopt. For non-agriculture presenters, you can imagine if you have a very aggressive activists for animal welfare, for vegan and so on, or for climate, they were also not very happy with all these things. They would like to have, okay, we stop the livestock, we change the nutrition completely in this sense. But I think nobody was really satisfied, but nobody was completely against, and this means we reached the goal. What was the problem? And later we see that this was a real problem. So all the time, all ministers were invited, but they were very passive. For them, they ignore the farmers, they ignore the activists, they behave themselves like, you know, we are above the system, we are those responsible for everything. And I think this was the mistake, that top of the ministry was not more involved into the process, and to bring also the high level political decision makers and civil servants. It was in fact a problem that we deal with the level of director of the sectors, not minister and state secretary. They were not involved because they didn't know in which direction we will go, or we succeed, or what will happen if the farmers go on the street because of the new document and so on. But you can imagine how this is in Slovenia, I think, very, 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 very closely what's happening here. So what we learned? First of all, nobody is talking before about the food system transition officially. There is no legal text. So this is the first text, first document, which is bringing this into the public discussion. Second, it is important that who is bringing the things, that mostly non-agriculture stakeholders, some researchers, but not all of them. The majority of researchers were on the side of very focused agriculture side, so food security and all these things. But political discourse you can change through such a process, but has to be also managed also through media and the high level political audience. So is there a general understanding or reaction of food system transition? I think we cannot say that concept has taken hold, far from it, but I think it's become the public issue. And second, there is no really reaction. If you are talking openly and showing the real things with the data, and you are showing in which directions are things going, I think you can win at least the people that they are willing to talk about this and to make some conclusion. So who are the actors who understand and advocate it and who does not accept? So it is interesting that this was really the battle between typical agriculture stakeholders and ministerial people and non-agriculture and new elite in the ministry. So in fact, without three persons in the ministry, which were one of them in Brussels, one of them is coming from ecological movement and so on, they brought the issue to the vision, especially then in communication with some researcher who supported this. So finally, conclusion, assessment, the very first attempt. So can we apply this experience to other CECs? Of course, not entirely, but we learned a lot, especially the role of agents, how it's important to have political decision makers, how it's important to have all parts of the government. What we learned from Slovenia that, in fact, food system transition is not the real topic in this part of the Europe. Why not? Because it's coming from the Brussels, and you know, if we are talking about the sustainability millennium objectives, some countries have a legal structure, the concept, we are taking, okay, and it's somewhere in the papers without any monitoring, without any actions, and so on. And this is typical. Why the reasons for such a low acceptance or ignorance about the system? I think we are still, it's coming a little bit from old-fashioned agronomic approach, but also from the communist time. We are still struggling for the tons of wheat and tons of milk. And this internal productivist discourse is prevailing in the structures of institutions, ministries, and of course, farmers' organizations. All the new questions, environmental, social, public health, are coming, especially in the last 5 years, but are not entering very, how to say, deeply into the agriculture discussion. We have a lot of institutional deficit in the CEC, I will say in Slovenia and probably in the CEC, with the adoption and implementation of new societal teams. So we don't have professors for food system, for agroecology. We don't have master programs. So it's a quite on the edge topic, and in research terms, so it's coming. It's better now than it was 3 years ago. But we are maybe lagging behind. And I think the one of the problems is also EU, because in CEC we are followers. We are still not able to accept in Orban style. We are still not capable to develop our own concepts and our systems. So we are followers. And because EU institutions are not doing, except on the research side, but what we have seen now, they are not adopting the system into the regulations and into the policy. It's clear that this is a part of the problem. Actors, we have three types of actors. Enabling actors are a very small group of researchers, so this is very important that research is, like in the other parts of Europe, is starting to deal with these issues, and I see in Poland it's the case, but also environmental NGOs, and also, of course, some people in the ministry. Inhibitory actors are mostly the whole agro-food community. What is interesting in Slovenia, also the food companies, so the business has nothing to say, you know, this is administration, this is regulation, we don't need this. Why? Because they are not developing in this kind of supply chains. For them is the competitiveness and low price, the primary target, and so on. So food system transition neutral, and these are the minority. We have to convince them Yes, and to introduce this to the general public, to the top, to the schools, academia, and so on. But this predominates the story. So the last slide, how to strengthen the food system transition, so recommendation from the front lines. EU level, I think EU has really be more has to have more courage to for more conceptual definitions with legal implications and so on. Also, support for research project and consulting, which is already happened, but in fact in East should be more promoted. National level, organize forums, dialogue group, society, science, government, dialogue, new fields, new research, also part of advisory organization. But if you have problem to introduce environmental issue, if you have problem to introduce societal issue, if you have problem to introduce agroecology, it's clear that it will be much more difficult to introduce the food system transition issue. So what else? You see, I'm not very optimistic, but I think we should change, and maybe only to define it. What do you think where the vision is now? It's a formal obligation of the country, already from one government delivered to another one? No. The former government stopped the vision because, what do you think? It was too agriculture or too environmental? The people from the environment, which they have possibility and opportunity to be part, they had hundreds of invitations. Some of them, they were there, but on a very low level. When it's come to the governmental level, they said, it's not enough ambitious. We have to change everything. And they stopped the process. So Martin Luther King will say, yes, we must accept disappointment. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. And maybe not. Yes, like we will go to the questions in the, just in a second, because like before that, I would like to introduce our guests to a little bit reflect, and then we'll have an open floor for the questions. But if you have a question, like direct question to the specific presentation, like in a moment, I'll give you the floor. Okay. So like that, thank you very much. It was not very optimistic, but we had like two perspectives. One is telling us what was also conferred by Emil. That we have a lot of discussion around the food system and the transformation, the transition on the level of the research. So like the researchers are always like they're bringing the different perspectives. So like we go out of the perspective of the agricultural sector development to the food system, which is bringing us like the more systemic approach, so like the giving us the tools to understand what are the interrelations between the not only the production but also like the processing, distribution, consumption, and all spheres of economic development. So like this is working well. And Sylvia brought us this perspective. Great that like there is a good discussion and a. In the internationally, but also like in the countries, but like researchers are trying to develop the new framework for the analysis. At the same time, while we are trying to adopt it at the country level, and as the Emmy's case, there is like always the problem of a different institutional setup, especially like when we think and what we always stress as researchers, silos, yeah, that we are like. Coping with and trying to go beyond those with the concept, and the food system perspective is one of them. So and Emmy said that this is like the for Slovenia, also for the Central Eastern Europe. We are very optimistic in Poland because like we are having this discussion with the stakeholders, but what will this discussion end we'll see in the future. Maybe we'll have like very similar path as Slovenia, but maybe not. And this is the hope that we that was like recalled by the Emil. But because we have a different perspective, so like we have a colleagues from the UK, from Croatia, and Germany. Of course, Slovenia and Italy. So I would like to a little bit extend this to your opinions. Like first, because Emil mentioned that this is like really for the Central Eastern Europe. Is it only for the Central Eastern European countries, like this part of the world, which is of the Europe, which is like, of course, because we have a different history, institutional background, it can appear here like the pre-Creole. But what about like the other countries of the region, like all the Europe, and how do you see those processes in your countries? So I will start like with those small opinion to introduce you, because like the question we received from the audience can be addressed by all our guests. So that's why I would like to start with the very short, like 2-3 minutes perspective from your side about how is it going on in your countries. So Peter Noy, I would start with you, like just to make a quick round.
Can I check this is working? Is it okay? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, great. Thank you so much, Paul. And yeah, lovely to be here. Yeah, so from a UK perspective, and I think reflecting on Emil's and Sylvia's talks, I think that there are lots of similarities, but also differences between those contexts. And you know, Emil, I was really struck when you were sort of talking about you know, the outcomes at the end and how nobody was really happy with the situation. And I think, you know, that really talks to the divested interests for each of those parties across the food system, and one of the reasons why it's so complicated to navigate some of these system dynamics is because of those relationships between those different actors, and really what is it that they want to get out of the system, and lots of them have, you know, competing interests around economics, but also, you know, about environmental impacts or social impacts, and I think both talks really nicely touched upon that. I think there's certainly, you know, those reflections are seen in the UK, and certainly, you know, you have very diverse farmer populations. So thinking about your agricultural stakeholders that would look at that and be unhappy with, you know, a food systems transitions to some extent because of their, you know, cultural heritage and understanding of how their family had always done something on farm, and therefore moving away from that is actually a really challenging thing to accept. But I think probably one of the things that struck me when you were talking about it is that, you know, potentially in the UK, this discourse has been going on in public maybe longer, and therefore has almost seeped into the consciousness of a lot of those stakeholders. And so, you know, I think when we have these conversations in the EU, there is an understanding of the concept and why it's necessary, and an understanding on that level. But I think we still come to the same challenges when it's sort of like, you know, when it hits, you know, the rubber hits the road, it's sort of like, well, I don't want to do that because it's not in my best interest. And so I think, you know, those outcomes are certainly very much reflected in the UK. And I think, you know, we were talking earlier about some of the challenges. And I think certainly at a government level, you know, there are big silos in different departments that are responsible for different parts of policy across the food system. And there is very little agreement between those different government government departments on how to enable that transition. And so I think actually, you know, there's lots of similarities, that there is still lots of challenges in terms of navigating kind of a common understanding and of how we make systematic change.
Okay, thank you very much. And a comment from Lydia.
Thank you.
About Croatia.
I can say that the situation in Croatia is pretty similar like in Slovenia. Very strong focus on agriculture, stones, etc. Also, we are now, our government is now discovering the problem of food security, because our production is declining. We spend a lot of EU money, but we have production that is declining, and the landscape is changing. There are some climate changes, there are the wars in Iran, Ukraine, and now we are facing with the problem that we are not self-sufficient. If borders are closed, we will be hungry. So, and when we speak about food system, there is not a lot of for now in our governments, and maybe in research, but very beginning. So we are on the beginning of this process, and we are very strong on the focus on the agriculture. Very similar like in Slovenia, maybe even worse. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll ask Marijke. Yeah,
I think it's similar to what Peter described about the UK, that different ministries are do have different responsibilities that all touch on parts of food systems. So there is not a systemic approach on the governmental level, probably, or to a lesser extent. But I think within research, it really became a big field in Germany, although a lot is still also focusing on agriculture, and that is a dominant theme also within the German research. What I found interesting, what you said, that it has become a public issue, and I'm not so sure at this current moment how much of a public issue is that, because there seem to be more pressing discussions in Germany, one being the political right-wing movement, but also the rise in prices of groceries became more expensive, energy became more expensive. So starting with the war on Ukraine, there was kind of a backlash in this renewable energy transition in a way, so that lignite, brown coal became more important again within Germany. And now it's probably also coming like with the questions of oil and gas prices, what will happen there? And I feel like food systems are then now taking a back seat because there seem to be more pressing needs. But I think what's also probably similar to what you were describing, this idea of these are EU ideas, it comes from Brussels, and now we have to do this. I think that's very similar in Germany too. And I would be interested in hearing what you said, because within your conclusions, you now said you would want, if I understood you correctly, the EU to have even more legally binding definitions. And I wondered how that fits with your idea of the acceptance problem that we face when things come from the EU.
Okay, and also ask Silvia from an Italian perspective.
I would just like to connect to the last sentence, because we have been discussing a lot within the SCAR Food System Working Group and at EU level on the opportunity to have a legal framework on food systems approaches. And we will have a workshop on that in Brussels at the end of September. So it's really something we want to address. We have different perspectives, of course, coming from the different countries. There are those who, like some Austrian representatives, who really want a legal framework to impose something, because otherwise the ministries will not and never take actions. Others, like often the Italians, who don't want to be binded by the EU and Brussels. Still, my perspective is that it is in line with what my previous colleagues were saying, is that we need a framework that gives us a direction and some definitions that are shared, but then in the end the action has to be taken at local level and be contextualized to the different strategies that can be implemented. That is, it has to be place-based approach. And this is very much in line with also the Italian situation that is very different to the one that you have been describing in terms of productivist approach. In Italy, we have a very high value added and quality oriented food system. So we just don't want to produce more at lower costs. We really want to become more competitive, but in terms of quality, of premium prices. So because of the crisis we are undertaking, we had a short-term rebalancing, but these are only contingent adjustments. The mainstream model is based on quality and on added value. In terms of adopting the food system approach at political level, I would say that this is not really clear. There are no policy documents like the one that you have developed that are addressing a food system strategy. And I often have the perspective that they mix the concept of food system with supply chain. So we have supply chain strategy often and projects and funding, but the systemic approach is a bit different. So we still have a long way to go. Thank you.
Okay, would you like to reflect on this?
Only that this EU forcing or not forcing. So it's double coin. Of course, everything what is coming in Brussels, in our region, is okay. We are against it. You know, they have another conditions, another problems, and so on. But without, like my colleague Silvia told us, without legal enforcement and definition and concept, there will be no change. For sure not, because agriculture is a part of the story, it's not the whole story. And if we don't change to the systemic approach, there will be no change in policy. But we know it's a battle for the money, for distribution of the fundings, and so on. And it's a very difficult issue.
Thank you. And before I ask my question, like following your statement, like that change is needed, I'll give the floor to the audience. Ruta Śpiewak, she asked for the Ruta. Are you joining?
Yeah.
To ask the question. So
that was very interesting, especially your presentation. I'm sorry, I was late, so I didn't hear the previous one. It was very interesting, especially that I am, besides that I'm a researcher, I'm also the co-creative of the network of consumer cooperatives. So we do this bottom up at very, very bottom, the trying to introduce the change, and we are not optimistic as you are. But on the other hand, I'm trying to catch something that is optimistic. So my question is that, do you think that in Central and Eastern Europe, especially, there are these things that they are introduced by EU are already there, but named differently? Like, for example, I'm also doing the project on agroecology and women, and the woman we asked about agroecology, they didn't know the term, but they do some agroecological approach. So maybe this is maybe it's not as bad as we think, but because it's already here and it has been, but it's not named in the as the EU wants to, you know, name things. This is one thing. And another thing I would like to ask do you think that the food transition, I know this is the presentation, maybe it was differently framed, but isn't it like the food transition term too vague if you come to the actors, like the government, and you ask them about, let's make a food transition change? That's something that people are, what is this? This is too vague to where to start from. But maybe this is a matter of presentation. Maybe you've managed differently. So but thank you very much. And I see that this is, because I'm really interested in our part of the Europe is different, still is different, and probably will be forever different, but maybe it's not as bad as we think. However, me as a part of the consumer cooperative for very long time, I'm not optimistic, and the only hope comes from the local government, from my experience. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And this is a question to Emily, but also to all of us, because it's like we were talking is that like when you bring a concept that is very like viable in a research approach, but not in direct practice, is it like that like we can see that operationalization of this approach can be like placed in other, so like not introduce the concept, but try to correspond then between the concept and like the tools or like the policy developments that are reflecting this approach. Yeah, so this is very interesting perspective and a question to you.
Yeah, directly answering the question, the first one, yes, there are many things which are on the place, and sometimes we are losing the development, the pathways, only to name them. I agree. Sometimes it's bad, you know. We still have in the CEC local production line, but they are disappearing. Huh? So we still have well-connected primary sector, so supply chain, which are producing positive impacts in sustainable way and so on. But how to bring the issue is difficult. And sometimes only new wording is not changing. I agree with you. We haven't problem to explain about the food system concept. Everybody was happy, but how they have seen. For instance, I think this silos mentality is not only the agriculture one. The people from public health, they have seen only their part. And they pushed only on these things. The people from climate, the same. The food industry and so on and so on. The problem is dialogue, understand, and multidisciplinary approach. We are all educated, so very, very sectorally. We are not able to communicate and to have a normal dialogue with other bubbles. And I think here is the main challenge. How to change here? How the people from the health movement or health institutions will understand the agriculture? Not to say, You have to change this and to reduce this and to make this. Or the people for national conservation movement. We have to go 100 years ago. No. We have to develop technologies and the production system which will allow us to keep the nature, at least in the conservation part, and so on. So talk, discussion, and we need the brokers. And I think that the only brokers are researchers, or I will say more advanced civil servants. But what is the problem? The politicians, for them is this too complicated, because they need black-white story and populist story. And you don't gain if you are talking about the food system, except if you are going on the farmer side or on the public health side or whatever. So I think we have the strongest problem with the politician, and with growing populism and pragmatism of the political world in Europe, not only the CEC, all around, I think this is one of the key problems. How to explain one guy, for instance, if you look the new Bulgarian prime minister, how to explain such a person about the food system? No chance. Or about your new guys, not to speak about the all right-wing farmers, because they are parties. So. I'm going into the very dangerous direction, so I'm so sorry.
Okay, do anyone want to comment on this? Peter, I see it. Yeah.
I think Emil put it really nicely. I mean, I think just further reflection. So, one of the things that I think is very apparent to us at the Food Systems Institute is that interdisciplinary approaches in general require really breaking down language so that everybody in the room understands it from the beginning. And I think it really, requires being explicit about what you mean when you say certain things. We have examples where you talk about sustainability and, to some people they think you're talking about environmental sustainability, whereas others think you're talking about financial sustainability, and others again think that you're talking about you know, certain social contexts and things like that. So, you know, and that's just one simple word. And so when you spread that to the context of a food systems transition, and you're talking about, you know, quite conceptual things at a high level to stakeholders who play a role but aren't necessarily embedded in that, the academic understanding of how a system works, it can become really challenging. And so, yeah, I think certainly, you know, it was interesting that you sort of reflected that some of your stakeholders are already taking an agroecological approach, right? And I think that's it. Is actually a lot of these things are happening in practice, but it's the language that you use, and it can really polarize certain stakeholders. You know, we had an example of when we were talking to farmers, we started talking about regenerative farming or regenerative agriculture, and they took that very negatively. They were like, well, are you saying what I'm doing is not regenerative? And even though they were using regenerative agriculture techniques, right? And so, you know, I think language is probably the biggest barrier that we face as a society when we're trying to tackle these types of issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, we have a question from here.
Yes, I have a question following your very interesting discussion and excellent and very ambitious presentations of very ambitious task. And so language, which all understand, I think, is about incentives, competing interests. So I think one issue here is that it's for me, it's not clear which actors have what incentives to actually take part in this transition. We all we are from the country which went through a big transition. So one thing I think is clear, there will be winners and losers. And nobody talks about this here, which is a bit, you know, makes things suspicious, because and also for politicians, I think they understand this language that, you know, you will lose some voters. So, I mean, I, as a researcher, I think it's very important to understand each actors of the food, agri-food chain and agri-food system incentives and also interests, because there may be competing interests even in the chain, even in the system. So it's mission impossible if it's not solved at the beginning. Then losers and winners, yes, who is gonna lose and how it can be compensated. It's much better to say explicitly, okay, some will be under the pressure, but we have measures to compensate or to take you in other way. But like keeping silence about this and only promising paradise, I think it's not really is working. And also for me, transition versus like incremental change and transition of system. So like my kind of thinking is that changing behavior of one group is already very complex. I saw in Sylvia's presentation link to this comp model, I think, this capabilities, opportunities and motivations, which drives the behavioral change. So do we know, for example, at the moment, which of those components actually are underperforming so that we can do something about it to promote the change, behavioral change? This is one of the questions. And another is like, do all actors in the system have to change in order that the whole system changes, or it's one changes and there is a chain reaction, another change? They're like very fundamental questions. What do you mean by changing the system? Yeah, all actors have to change. How much? And who should start changes to make a chain reaction? Or that these are very challenging questions, I think. And in governance, I think when I saw Sylvia's presentation, I don't see food waste anyway in the it could be on the consumers side or governance side, but it's not there. Yes, and also why we think that consumers want to change a diet. Maybe they don't. I mean, veggies do not look very nicely to those who like meat and so on. So, I mean, without understanding incentives and taking correct measures, we cannot expect any change, and not to mention transition. And for me, transition is also something which is like politically driven. So if the politicians are not involved or are afraid because they don't know the answers, yes, how many voters they will lose, what it means for which groups of interests, how they will, what it means in practice. So it will be very difficult to start anything, because who is governing this process in Europe? Yes, I mean, who is governing the change? Yes, taking responsibility for it. Yes, and saying who should do what. And maybe it's enough.
Thank you. Also, broad perspective and many questions, not like only one, but very in line, but also corresponding to what was said. Yeah, please.
So first of all, thanks, because I think you went very much in depth into the presentation, which means that I've been clear enough for your reflections now. I think that the whole problem is related to a multi-level transformative governance. So it's not only a question of governance, but how this governance can be transformative and towards which outcomes. We have identified outcomes at social, environmental and health level, but also at economic level. So I don't think we can answer with one single action, and that we already know where to start from. This is the reason why these themes are at the center and prioritized in the Strategic Research and Innovation Agenda. That is, we need to know more about incentives, competing interests, winners and losers, of course. It is at the debate also at EU level. I was participating in the Food 2040 workshop a few weeks ago, and I was quite amazed at what one representative from the Commission in the DG Environment said. It's okay if farmers just have 40 cents for their fruits, it doesn't matter. It matters that the consumers pay so much. We have to manage the system better. We have to look better into the supply chain. And I said, no, it's not okay if the farmers get 40 cents for their oranges. And it's a question of power relations, distribution of value, that is very, very sensitive, but also of a common understanding, as you were saying. I'm totally in line with what you were saying. And unfortunately, when we look at the research, and we went through many, many projects, the governance issue is very little addressed, and especially at private level. Because it's a very sensitive theme. So I think, and I totally agree that we should prioritize it. But still in the priorities, it's not so evident. What does this mean? That in the end, it's the governments that decide, also at EU level, in the partnerships, what to fund and what not to fund. So we have to take action more and more to make everybody know
that the transformative governance theme is very, very relevant. So I will do my best in order to go forward.
Maybe, of course, when we prepared this vision in Slovenia, there was all the time the story about the winner and losers. How we manage this, especially with this scenario analysis, we show it in which direction we are going, where there is no change. We lost the farms. There will be no young generation or very few willing to start. We have a problem with environment, with nature, with climate. Okay, some positive things, but there is also public health issues. Everything with the data, with the data. So are you are a representative of society. Are you satisfied with this? No. Nobody said, somebody pick up, said, no, this is the biggest problem. No, everything. You agree, everything is a problem. Okay. And then you are starting to develop, okay, now what we can change, what is realistically, which of course means that we will lost 30,000 farms, but at least not only 3,000, 5,000. Maybe with such a support, we will develop 10,000 farms, which will be some of them more, I would say, environmental friendly, more innovative, and. In this way, if you are talking, it's possible. Problem, what I see that the stakeholders are more willing in this discussion, that the biggest problem is the government. The governmental representatives are not willing to go out of their expertise. I'm for climate. For me, it's only important to reduce this. Who takes care of farmers or on rural areas or public health? And I think this is a problem of culture. Here we have a problem in CEC. Our administration is not anymore so young. It's still in process of evolution. A lot of good people are going to the Brussels on the international, especially in the small countries, this is a problem, and so on. So we have to develop much better governance, I agree completely, but also the personal policy, human resource management. Then you can change it. Only the people can change. Only the people can convince the others that food system transition is not only because of planet. Because of so high level goals. No, it's because of us. Because there is only one alternative. Trump America, you say there is no climate crisis, there is no biodiversity crisis, there is no social crisis, everything, the problems are somewhere else, China, Europe, and so on. No, it's stupidity of modern political world. So in Europe, if we are enlightened, if we are thinking a little bit better and more for the people, then we have to develop all these processes.
When I was talking before about transformative multi-level governance, I forgot to explain better what I think by multi-level governance, which is very important to me because I have been working with operational groups, that is the CAP Rural Development Policy, a lot. And I think they may be particularly effective if they are well managed and well developed, because this is really a place-based approach where things start to change. So where really farmers and other members of the system may connect with researchers, advisors, sometimes policymakers. That is the way I try to manage them, so that all the different stakeholders are at the same table. As he was saying before, sometimes they have never been at the same table. The policymakers are within their offices and they never know what happens on the ground, what are the real needs. And scientists, they just propose their magic idea to the farmers without really knowing what are their needs. So only in this way, if we embed our action in real world, multi-actor situations, living labs, policy labs, we can really try to make the change and then scale it up. Of course, we need funding. I'm an economist. I am very deeply involved in funding. And I think that these financial economic incentives are fundamental, because we cannot ask people to have participatory approaches and lose their time for our sake. It has to be supported somehow. Their time has a value. And so I think that the AKIS approach and operational groups approach may start a change. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah, Peter.
Yeah. I was just going to, just very briefly, coming back to what you were saying about winners and losers, I guess a very quick example would be in the UK, they recently wanted to do a review of reducing fertilizer use on farm. And so, you know, they went out, they asked for evidence. Now, as part of that consultation, what they found was that, you know, a lot of people didn't want to engage, particularly fertilizer companies, because they were looking at it as though, well, I'm going to be a loser in this situation. And through consultation with some of my colleagues, they ended up reframing it and releasing it as the future of fertilizer. And then what happened after they reframed it to the future of fertilizer is all these fertilizer companies were very interested to engage, because they then saw that they were part of the solution. Okay, and so, you know, some of this is also about how you frame a particular challenge so that it engages people rather than turns them away. And I guess that was similar to what I was saying about language, but I just wanted to kind of give that as an example of how you can try and build coalitions around topics where they all see that they contribute to that future rather than it goes against what their interests.
Yeah, thank you very much. And this brings a quite interesting perspective, because it's not only like the definition, like the collaboration within the actors, but the big gap we have here is like between the research and the policymakers, and like maybe that was like assessment was very tough for the policymakers. That are not following the idea of food systems enough to translate it into the tools, yeah. But I guess the very important from their perspective, they have like the framework they are operating, yeah. And this framework is like the framework of a national strategic approaches and like Brussels, like so like EU perspectives, and they are implemented through the Common Agriculture Policy. And that's why they operating within this framework. So like if we introduce more food system perspectives into the general policy, and we can expect that also like the policymakers, not politicians, policymakers, like the administration will bring more solutions and understanding into the practice. And this is also the perspective. And we have one question from the audience online. Professor Figa asked the question. I don't know if you want to raise this question personally, but if not, I will ask my colleague to read it, because this is the perspective on the policy.
To what extent does the current cap address the envisioned FST, and if the cap is to be reformed, what concrete policy incentives and instruments could facilitate this process?
How to bring this like the practically in the common agricultural policy and multi-annual financial frameworks that is like is discussed, and this is the perfect time to come up with the ideas but also with the evidence, I guess, on the food systems, like bringing this perspective. So would you like to start?
I will start. Yes, I think now the things, so the system is so flexible that is in the hands of the country. If for the national regional partnership program, they will introduce food system transition as one of the priorities. If the countries are deciding like this, they have enough financial resources from the CAP, which is now more agriculture oriented, but outside the ring fencing money for the CAP, which is mostly income oriented, but still you have here agro-environmental transition, you have also you can give more money for the social things, but this systemic approach
can be involved or introduced only through, I would say, priorities in general terms of national regional partnership program. But here I have a problem, because who will govern the system of the national governance programs? Mostly cohesion policies or finance ministries or prime minister offices. And I'm not sure if they are, how to say, willing to introduce something which for them is also covered by agriculture policy. But I think we have to discuss these things. And for the moment in Slovenia, we are trying to introduce this issue. I'm sure that we will not be successful, but at least if you need more systemic approach, involvement of more ministries and more funds and so on, instruments, you then the new frame is better than what we had now. But some country will use it. I'm sure that some Nordic country will use this term or use this opportunity. But we will see. For CEC, I think we have to be aware of what can be done, and we have to push in public debate.
Okay, I'm wondering, because Lydia, you are like working in a public agency for the agriculture and food development, and you have like the perspective, not like as a policymaker, but someone that is using the tools. So how is your perspective about like the possibility of the taking stock of the knowledge we have of a food system and introducing it more in the like more maybe like wise incentives or like policy tools that can be introduced?
Yes, I'm working in public administration, and what I can see from inside, I see that sometimes policy governance is willing to do and to accept, but they don't know how. And when we speak about the policy, EU-Brussels, most of us think that are good things, but we are not, we have not capacity to implement these policies on the right way. We have good laws, we have good regulation, but operationalization is the problem. We don't know how to make this operationalization. So maybe we have, when we speak maybe about green procurement, we have good regulation, we have good willingness, but how to operationalization is the problem, because our institution are not willing to accept this green procurement, but we are dealing with the problem of they don't know how to deal with such a thing. So I don't think that governments is not willing. I think that a lot of people are willing, but they need more information, they need education, it must be increased their capacities to make and to implement. So
okay, and we have a Professor Figel online, and he raised his hand, so the floor is yours if you would like to comment. Just unmute yourself and go on.
Send some greetings to the speakers and presenters, especially Professor Aryabits. Hi, we had a chance to interact a lot of times, especially during the meeting of agriculture economists in Ljubljana when it was held some years ago. Anyway, my thinking about food transformation system, of course, all these presentations were very useful and enriching knowledge, is that we are in the face of kind of like an intellectual exercise, mostly talking about it, with little concrete proposals to be implemented at policy levels. I'm quite critical about CEP regarding this issue, because, when talking about, of course, political economy, most solutions, especially as Professor Ryavis mentioned, it's about income and providing sufficient good living in rural areas. It's less about being innovation and efficiency driven. I fully agree that it would depend on national approaches, especially right now there is a room, more and more room for governments, membership countries or member countries' government to deal with all these challenges. But still, we need to work more as economists, especially on economic incentives, because if systems are not efficiency driven, and consumers will not see utility in all these changes, probably will stay at the, I would say, this intellectual exercise, talking about something what would be good, but it will stay as a wishful thinking. So economic incentives to be included to develop some efficiency-driven process, I think it's crucial. Thank you very much, and I congratulate the organizers on really taking this topic and put it on the agenda for discussion. However, we'll be probably happier to see more participants during this seminar to disseminate this absolutely necessary to be implemented thinking for food system transformation. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you. Luckily, we have also like YouTube transmission. There's people there, like also from the around the Europe. Before I give the floor to our speakers, I'll also ask Katarzyna for her reaction, and then we'll...
Yes, just ad votum. because we had the voice from public administration that there is a willingness and interest, but no tools. So the question is the scientific academic researchers in the project focused on proposing changes in institutions, or taking the institutions as they are, proposing the plan, strategic plan, how to implement, you know, what, where, so that ministries, for example, take interest when it comes to their particular arena. Yes, because there are two different approaches: to take all the ministries and try to make them understand how they work and, you know, try to find a way, or no, forget it, because it's institutional change which may not take place. But understanding how the ministries work, to plan as strategically how to make this, I will say again, chain reaction. Yes, we know that this minister will get interested when he gets on his table, tables about this and that, and then he will have to talk to his colleague from environment, because then they have overlapping something and so on. So, like, which strategy? Changing institutions or finding a way in an existing institutional setting to implement this ambitious plan?
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It's like wonderful, because it was my also next point, and I would like to address, and like actually the final point for today, because this is something what we have from our discussion, that it is like how to influence the preparation for the next multi-annual financial framework, to the new plans in the national level. It's like, and we see that the research is very active in the food system approach, and we see like the need for the evidence to be implemented in the next, like the process of the planning, so be timely with the evidence linking this in a systemic way. And that's why I like understand that this is the role also of a research, but I would like to extend this question: who is doing that job? Yeah, who is like important actor in your countries, like the playing for like having a good impact on the food systems perspective? So, like, even if it's not like called the food system stakeholder, but like the doing those perspective oriented, like the systemic approach for the food systems to be addressed by the certain ministries and the sectors. Yeah. So like, if you would think, who is that? Like, who is that that organization?
Are we gonna follow in your point?
Yeah. So,
actually, question: what do you think about commercial entities? Like, I think in Poland, the commercial entities, they do, fortunately or unfortunately, very important play in changing the food system. So, what do you think? Following the Pavel's point.
Thank you very much. So, tough question. Who would like to start first? Yeah, great.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're all really good questions, really challenging questions. And I think, you know, it sort of gets to the heart of the topic. Maybe I can reflect on the approach that we're taking. And I'm not saying it's the right approach. But so within the University of Nottingham, I guess we've got a long tradition of agriculture and food research. And the way we're taking our approach in the Food Systems Institute is to arrange our academics into centres that focus on food policy, one that focuses on a centre for equitable and inclusive food systems, which really focuses on working with NGOs, local stakeholders, so local government, community organisations, those sorts of things. And then we have two technical ones, one that focuses on, so one's a centre for sustainable agricultural technologies, and one is really around food technologies. Now, the reason for doing that is because each of those speaks the language of the stakeholders that they're working with. They understand the technology, but we can use the Institute to initiate conversations between those different stakeholder groups and to try and build some of those coalitions. So I think, you know, in terms of, you know, how do you influence government, I think it comes to kind of your latter point, which is we try not to force institutional change, but it is, okay, we know the people and we know what they're interested in. And so can you, you know, coming back to that language, how can you frame that transition into things that they're interested in? And I think it comes back to the comment online, which was, you know, what is the economic incentive? Because I think actually it's really important that any transition, they're only going to adopt it, particularly commercial entities, if they see a financial benefit. And you can quite often tell them about fabulous technology that's been developed, and they ask you about the finances of it, and that's where the conversation ends, because it's no longer something that's practically implementable within their organization. Now, I think one of the ways you can sometimes get around that is also, you know, trying to put them in a future perspective and say, well, right now, it doesn't make economic sense for you to adopt this technology. But in 20 years' time, you're going to be competing with these types of people. And, you know, and there are going to be new companies that have come up utilizing this knowledge, and they're going to be able to outcompete you for whatever reason, right? And so sometimes it's also about framing it in terms of their future perspectives as well. And so they understand the foresight elements of this transition. So I guess they would be my initial reflections, and hopefully my esteemed colleagues will further the conversation.
Okay, I can agree with you in some things. Normally, I think that I see in our case in Croatia, speak with all the ministries on the high level, maybe it's not efficient always. Maybe sometimes it's very efficient to find persons inside who are willing to work and who are interested in this theme. So boundary spanner under institution to advocate these issues. That seems to me, and it's sometimes it's efficient if we want to push some changes. And so also sometimes we can do through processes to work on some process when we speak. Maybe I now speak about this green procurement because we are working now on this theme, but that's one process where you can make some changes in institution, in from ministry to local government to the included food hubs, producers, and so you can put all the people in one table, and then you can also you speak about food system change through one process. One process is public, green public procurement. So, Emil.
So I will go on two questions: commercial entities and who is decisive actor. And I will go with the bad and good story approach. So, commercial actors. The good story is that, for instance, in Denmark, Sweden, also, if we had what we heard from Italy, if they are interested for to increase the value added from the products, they have to go in this direction to have the concept of supply chain which is working, but also with all impacts, the story behind sustainable waste. And so on. And you have many good stories. Bad stories, I don't know a lot in Eastern Europe, except some small stories, which are now growing and starting farmers group, dairies, wine production, and so on. In terms of key actors, the bad story is that the modern policies moving to the hands of closed bubbles within the governments, with the civil servants deciding everything, and the policy makers selling the stories. There will be no improvement. We are going in the wrong direction. But it's more and more these things. But the good story is, if I'm going, and I know very good the situation in Slovenia, because we are so small, we know each other. So the best story is, in terms of finance ministry, environmental ministry, agriculture ministry, prime minister, is if there is combination of high-level civil servant understanding the concepts, willing to change something, able to convince the policymakers, and the research behind, one person, two persons, who are doing this from the state reason, because it is important for the country. And you have a lot of good stories in Slovenia still, where, for instance, we are now supporting Prime Minister in terms of MFF. So, three professors, four civil servants. We will do our best. So there are still stories. But the problem is that the average civil servants are not willing to hear the crazy professor. They don't understand the topics, and they are talking something which is not feasible and not regulatory, and. But to push this science decision-making processes, I will say, very important. So I hope that the good stories will win in this situation. Great.
Well, I must be a bit less optimistic on Italy, on Italian situations, because I started working as an advisor to the policymaker like 30 years ago. And really, policies were evidence-based. That is, there was a real role for the academia to produce data in order to redirect the interventions. At the moment, maybe things are starting to change a bit, but in the last years, policies were designed without any evidence. That is, they were just interventions were adopted like on the basis of the fantasy or the political reward. And Twitch. which is very sad, I must say. But still, I must say that what he was saying before about building coalitions and trying not to be normative towards the policymakers, but to understand their needs in terms of capacity building and so in a multi-directional way, not just go with the document and say, this is what you should do, this will never produce a change.
And if you are top down, they really feel you as the professor who comes from the heaven and doesn't know what their real problems are. So the way I usually face this problem is we are in the same boat. We have different interests, but they are not competing. We want to go towards the same outcome. And so only in this participatory approaches that I really strongly believe in, we can reach consensus and coalitions. So I do agree, but it's not easy, of course. And I started from the bad side of the story. I learned from him.
Yeah, thank you. So maybe to summarize and to second what all of you have said, I think there are two very important things that came up here. One was the co-production of knowledge, so that we treat everyone who is involved in this as experts, because I think they are, and they do have very different perspectives on things, and it's necessary to take them seriously, also to come to more acceptance and also maybe new ideas and real innovation if we start to think about things differently. And I think the second theme also that came up now is the role of intermediaries, because I think what all of you said were like, we need to find individual people who really advocate for these ideas. And these can be scientists, you called them honest brokers at some point, which is also similar, or it can be like on an administrative level, it can be on a high level of politics or actually practitioners. It doesn't really matter, but the role of like having these intermediaries, I think, is important in all the different countries, which is also something that combines them all. So maybe this is also a nice way to sum up that this is what we will actually be mainly focusing on, and the research that we are doing in the Knowledge Hub, it will be on who are actually intermediaries and how do they work and what is there to hinder them or to enable their success, basically. So this is what we're mainly investigating now, in the hope to find more policy recommendation that maybe also help to operationalize what you have said before, because that's also important to not give another idea of how to throw over all our institutions and ministries, because as you said, it's probably not going very far, but maybe trying to find ways to operationalize that knowledge that we co-produce within that research.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And I wanted to conclude, but there was a you did it, and this is thank you so much. And the only thing that left is to work hard on this topic. Like, so, not to end the discussion within this seminar, but really we are we are here. Like, this group of people is really working as like in the participatory approach, but also like in the co-producing the knowledge. And this is the role of the science and the what we try to do, and work on the intermediaries to be identified, but also like brought to the topic and to work together. So this is the extremely important. So thank you very much for your presence, for your for this discussion with the audience and for you. I would like to express my big happiness that you came to Poland, that you are part of one of our seminars, and for this topic, because it's also close to my heart. And today our guests were Silvia Scaramucci, professor in the University of Florence. Thank you, Silvia, for your presentation. And Professor Emil Rijavec from the University of Ljubljana, Slovenia. Thank you for your presentation. And our great colleagues that were participating in the discussion. So Marijke Pampus of the Martin Luther University Halle, Wittenberg. Thank you very much, doctor. Dr. Lidia Maurovic-Kosak from the Croatian Agency for Agriculture and Food. Thank you very much. And Dr. Peter Noy, Director of the Food Systems Institute at the University of Nottingham. Thank you very much. And my name is Paweł Kmieliński, and we are in the Institute of the Rural and Agricultural Development of the Polish Academy of Sciences, because this is recorded and will be forever and the YouTube. So I want to stress this, and like I would like to encourage you all to take part in our seminars and in activities of our institute, because our colleagues will collaborate with us for the next year and more, hopefully like longer than a year. But thank you very much, and thank you for the FOSNET project for allowing us, like helping us to bring us together and talk about this very important issue. Thank you very much. Thank you to all. Thank you. See you next time.